209 days from being elected to Parliament till now. Christopher Luxon is the new leader of the National Party, promising a reset and to lead a party for all New Zealanders. The former chief executive of Air New Zealand and senior executive at Unilever says he will bring his real-world experience to the role as he rebuilds the party torn apart by division and infighting since his mentor and friend John Key left office, or certainly since successor Bill English did. Nicola Willis is deputy leader, but Mr Luxon is yet to allocate portfolios. He says much attention has been paid to Christopher Luxon's lack of political experience and low-key presence in parliamentary debates and question time and in his portfolios. In his year and a bit in Parliament, Christopher Luxon told me his background in business is a strength.
Well, I mean, my background really is working in large organisations and leading large organisations and having and building good teams. And, you know, that's what I bring here is a track record of good leadership in the commercial world. And essentially, when you look at what does it take to be a good CEO, you've sort of got to solve problems, get results, and get the best out of people. And that's a big part of actually what the job of the leader of the opposition is. The content might be different, the processes might be different, but a lot of the skills are transferable.
The turnaround, though, was an interesting point because certainly national supporters are looking for one. But was Air New Zealand an underperforming company? Wasn't it turned around under your predecessor?
Air New Zealand was a great company, and it's always been a great company, and it always will be. But each company at different phases has different challenges. And in Air New Zealand's time, you know, we were looking to improve the customer performance. We were looking to improve the employee engagement, make it a great place for people to work, and obviously the commercial results as well.
Is the turnaround a little bit of an overstatement, including with Unilever, one of the biggest companies in the world, because people do see the need for a massive turnaround in the fortunes of your caucus? Was it a little bit overstated to say, hey, I've done this in business?
No, look, I've done a lot of turnaround jobs because different pieces of businesses, you know, if you think about Unilever, big global company, 195 countries, probably as big as the New Zealand economy. And when you were the CEO of Canada, that was a problematical business for Unilever, all the different assignments I was given. So that's what I meant by that. But let's be, you know, clear, National Party is, you know, we're turning the page. We've put the reset in place. We're putting the baggage in the past. And that's why leadership does matter, because you've actually got to get the best out of that caucus and stop making the stories about ourselves and make them about the people of New Zealand.
If you were acting as a CEO, would you hire many members of your caucus?
I absolutely would. I've got 33 really experienced, talented and competent members. The challenge is how you actually get them hooked up to the right challenge and task and goals and get them playing well together.
Well, let's look at that. Is Simon Bridges going to be your finance spokesman?
We're going to make announcements over the coming days. That's the work of today and the next few days, is just actually going through and looking at the talents of each individual and saying who's best suited to what position, and we'll go forward on that basis.
Judith Collins, a week ago the caucus voted no confidence in her. Now you're talking about a significant role. As what?
We'll talk about that as we get through the couple of days, but there is a role for all 33 caucus members. We need the skills of each of those people because they complement each other, and that's what a team's all about, is actually assembling a team that complements each other.
As far as the reset goes, does Ms Collins get what she wanted, which was to sabotage Simon Bridges' apparently on-track return as leader?
Look, don't care about the past. I'm not associated or have baggage from the past. I'm here to reset it and move forward. And what I can tell you right now is the people of New Zealand are more concerned about the delivery of this government, and it's not that great.
You see, the challenge of the turnaround is why I'm asking these questions. You've got three failed leaders in your caucus, the rifts and divisions distracting the caucus right up to last Wednesday night when the government was being lashed by Parliament's Speaker over the traffic lights law. And your caucus was doing what it
was doing.
So how do you get from where you were last Wednesday night to where you're talking about it?
So Catherine, just stop and think about the last, since that period of time, what's actually happened. We've had an uncontested leadership transition. And what that means, that's how we used to do things in the National Party, believe it or not, before the previous 4 years. You actually, the caucus comes together, says, who's the best person who can unify us? And more importantly, what skills do they bring to the mix? And they put your trust in that leader, me in this case, and we go forward from there. So, yeah, I appreciate you want to talk about all the dramas from the past. That's lovely, but the bottom line
from last Wednesday. And actually, let's talk about how you did reach that resolution, because as of yesterday morning, Mr. Bridges was still contesting. The vote was perceived to be very tight. Who persuaded whom? What did turn it in the end and get a resolution without a vote?
Look, I'm not going into any of that. All I can tell you is an uncontested leadership transition speaks volumes, because what that says is all our caucus members are wanting to put the issues of the past aside. And I can honestly tell you, Catherine, I spoke to every caucus member, and it wasn't about what can I get out of this, what's in it for me. Everybody understood either this is the moment where you choose to change things or you don't. And that's what I was presenting to people was, do you want to keep doing it the way we've been doing it, which is pretty ineffective, or do you actually want to come together, bind as a team and focus on a goal and go forward? Because there's too much at stake in this country at the moment. We are not getting things done. A lot of PR, a lot of announcements, a lot of kumbaya, but not a lot of outcome and achievement and results. So that's what we've got to do.
Let's hear then your specific solutions to some of these biggest problems.
Yep.
What are they?
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to hit me with some questions. Let's just take that management of COVID, for example, right? If you think you want to de-risk anything that could happen into our future, why wouldn't you have doubled ICU beds, for example, like New South Wales?
Because you can't get the staff to staff them.
Yeah, so the question is, you can talk about how well prepared we are. We did a good job in 2020, but we've done an atrocious job in 2021, and we were chronically underprepared. You can take any of those issues and the management of those issues, and that's where management and execution and getting things done and it really does matter. You know, so let's just stick with that. You know, you've got a risk that you don't know.
Hang on. Let's talk about how we got here in the first place, and under the previous national government, spending in real terms on health flatlined, if not went backwards, and public health was completely downsized as a priority. So here's the difference between talking the talk and actually showing what your party did and does in government. Can you not accept some responsibility for the circumstances the health system was in when COVID broke out?
What I would say to you is, if you are actually leading and executing and getting things done, and you've been in government now for 4 years, you knew COVID was coming, and you haven't built an incremental extra ICU bed over 12 to 15 months, that's something, you know, why aren't you on the phone to someone? When you're thinking about restructuring a healthcare system, when we've got a single-minded focus, which is to keep our people safe around COVID, why wouldn't you do that? Why do you have a double vaccinated, negative tested Kiwis clogging up MIQ when we probably need those rooms for people who actually are suffering?
That doesn't answer the question.
I'm trying to highlight to you about execution and management really matters, you know, in terms of how you get things done.
Yeah, but so does the long-term health of an entire system, right? And that in some ways is the business of government, not just the short-term reactivity that has to happen, but the long-term stuff. So talk to me, you talk about lifting all boats. Now, that's been a mantra repeated ever since the fourth Labor government. But what has actually happened is wealth inequality has widened, including under the John Key National Government. So exactly how will
and
all
under this
but,
government
yes,
too,
correct,
right?
correct. But you're the leader, you're the leader of National, and you want to be Prime Minister. So how exactly will all boats be lifted under a government led by you? What will change?
So here's the critical problem in New Zealand over the last 30 years, right? We are some of the hardest working people on planet Earth, but we are not generating enough income or what's called productivity in this economy. And the problem with that is that means that our wages and our salaries are not going up sufficiently. And as a result, people don't get to have the choices and freedoms about how they get to live their lives as much. So you've got to go back and say, what's driving that? And the first thing that's driving it is actually education. And that's probably the most startling thing in the last 12 months that I've come to understand. Only 60% of our kids are going to school regularly, 9 days out of 10. We're in the bottom three of the developed countries on planet Earth in maths, reading and science, and we used to be at the top. And probably over the last 10 years, the knowledge of an average 15-year-old versus 10 years ago has slipped tremendously. So we've got to get quite specific about these things. So if you want to improve literacy, how do we embrace structured literacy? If you want to keep doing child-centred learning versus teacher-instructed learning, you've got to get into the detail.
Are you
going
to be a Minister of Education, by the way?
Sorry?
Are you going to be a Minister of Education, by the way? Are you going to take on education portfolio in the future?
I won't be personally, I suspect, but I think we'll find the right person for it going forward. But I'm very passionate about it because it is fundamentally the thing that moves our productivity, but also social mobility.
Sorry to go big picture. Sorry, I want to come back because I want to go big picture again. And I want to look again about the gap between what has been said in the past by national leaders and what's been delivered. Again,
under the John...
I'm
a new leader.
You're not an island. You're part of a team, you keep saying. and all governments are. So I want to look again at the gap between what's promised and what's delivered, because under that John Key government, headline GDP was pushed along by high immigration rates, which was part of creating a housing crisis. GDP per capita did not increase, which is the real measure. And second, productivity also continued petering along. So again, under a celebrated national government, we did not see the results promised when you really drill down. And I'm asking you what you will do that is different.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to explain to you. If you want to get into the problem solution, right, you've got to define the problem. The problem is we don't have enough productivity growth. It's the single biggest thing that could help the most New Zealanders, right, if we can actually get to a better place. I've spent the last few years, you know, you go look at places like Ireland and Switzerland and Denmark and Singapore and Israel, other small developed economies that have much higher levels of wealth than New Zealand. Why is that? What is happening there? A, they have a much more world-class, higher quality education system. Secondarily, they have really good infrastructure. In this country, in a country that our size, we don't have a plan for infrastructure from top to bottom. We do ad hoc projects, but we need a master plan. We need to be clear about how we fund it. We're clear about how we execute it, and actually getting it done. So I think, you know, those are examples. The second thing is we need to embrace a lot of automation. So if you could actually do that, you will raise productivity, and therefore you raise wages and salaries. And I know I'm getting quite technical, but these
you're not. You're actually sounding what Grant Robertson says in his Future of Work project. The problem is you criticise him for not delivering, and I'm pointing under the previous John Key government, did it fail on all these measures too? And did it fail to lift all boats?
It did not, and what I would say to you is, you know, Future of Work, I was at that first session actually kicking it off with Grant Robertson in my old life, in my old capacity, and I could tell you nothing's happened. So lovely bumper sticker, Future of Work, just transition, you know, whatever, but not getting it done.
All right, the question will be, whether it happens under you. Next question, we've got to talk about debt, because if we are talking about investment in all these things, including in a health system that was woefully underprepared for COVID, the trade-off then becomes how much do you invest and how much do you focus on paying down debt levels that are the highest they have been for many years now. What will be your approach to debt and to budget prudence?
Yeah, well, look, the first thing is that debt fundamentally has to be repaid at some point in time with interest, right? And the problem is that when you start to look at the interest bills, they actually become really large. And with that bill, you could be building hospitals or you could be building schools or doing other things. So you've got to be really prudent around debt. It's not something that, you know, at some point it comes home to bite you, and it actually limits the opportunities and the choices you get to make as a government about where you can make those investments. So that's the first point. The second point I'd say is that powering up the economy so that you can drive more revenue, so that you can get a higher tax set of taxes, so that you've got more money to spend, is actually really important too. That's not happening at the moment. If you look at our small businesses at the moment, they're not really encouraged or incented to actually go out and grow and drive more revenues. But the third thing is really around government spending. And, you know, when you sit there as a government and you open up a $785 million cycling or walking bridge across the Auckland Harbour.
But
they wasted $55 million
okay.
in 4 months.
That's small fry compared to the welfare budget, the education budget, the health. So which is it? Will you invest in health and education
Absolutely.
And infrastructure?
Absolutely.
Or will Absolutely. You manage down debt because you know full well you can't have your cake and eat it too? So where is the priority on debt reduction? And will you be as focused on it as the previous national government was? Or will you be more tolerant of it in order to invest in some of these areas? How much of a hawk are you?
What we're going to be very, very focused on is making sure we've got much better quality spending and no wasteful spending. And I can tell you, you know, we've added 10,000 bureaucrats here in Wellington at $1.3 billion in this government's short period of time, and we haven't got better outcomes. You don't have a better education system. We don't have a better healthcare system.
How much is the education system suffering because of the levels of child poverty in this country? Do you see a direct connection?
There are some real root causes about that, particularly about school attendance, you know, and that's been, because to be honest, Catherine, that's been probably the most surprising thing is the stats on education that I've come to know.
You know, I asked you about the link between that and poverty, because I know the educators make it, the teachers make it, the principals make it, the researchers make it.
Yeah,
do you make it?
It's a component of it, absolutely.
So what are you going to do about it?
Well, the component is, how do you actually, there's two things we can do. One is actually grow and create a bigger economy with a bigger engine that actually creates more income for people. The second thing we have to do is actually implement what is called social investment. It's actually, you know, targeting the people who are living challenged and complex lives.
Are you going to revive Bill English's social investment program?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And I've studied that program overseas in America, where I've seen it actually implemented.
What is your tax policy? Will there be tax cuts? Will there be any tax changes?
Well, we want people paying as minimal tax as they can, but we also have to keep an eye to the macroeconomic investments that we want to make. And so those are conversations that we'll think about as we go forward. And also, it depends a lot on what the economic position of New Zealand is and what we ultimately inherit.
There's been a lot of focus on your religious faith. Is that fair?
I think, you know, you've probably sensed in some of my responses, I think people have loaded heaps of labels on it and they've tried to misrepresent it and often, I think, use my faith in quite a negative way against me. It's pretty simple, really. My faith's sort of given me some purpose. It puts me in the context of something bigger, and I think that's pretty positive. I think New Zealanders of any faith would say that. And I'm really clear we have separation of church and state in New Zealand for very good reasons.
Did I hear you correctly that you said this morning on Morning Report that you don't actually regularly attend church?
I haven't been in a regular church attender for 5 years.
Okay, yeah,
people want to throw labels at it.
No, I think the reason people raise this, because remember Bill English practicing faith, Jim Bulger practicing faith, you know, I don't think there's a sort of a nefarious intent to this. But people, when they hear about a Pentecostal or an evangelical...
But who said I was Pentecostal or evangelical?
Precisely. Can you clear it up? Are you either of those things? Because people then begin to see, perhaps, a link-up between some churches' beliefs or preaching and the politicisation of things. Now, can you explain, please, where, if anywhere, your faith sits and whether that is an issue?
Yeah, so I wouldn't describe myself in those terms. I just describe myself as having a faith and a Christian faith, and that's it.
Will you ensure conscience votes for all of your caucus on social and matters that may be matters of faith?
We tend to do that, yeah, we do.
But will you? Because it was a big issue over the gay conversion therapy and it was part of the ructions that developed within the caucus. Well, will you guarantee people a caucus vote, a free vote?
Yeah. So let me just, you know, clarify that on the gay conversion thing, because, you know, we obviously voted for that bill. We voted down that bill in the first reading because we were concerned about protections for parents. There's been a big select committee process. The bill's going to come back. We want to support that bill. I want to support that bill. I think the practices are abhorrent. People should be free to love who they love, and we want to make sure we get it right. But I have to be honest, I remember that week, the Minister of Justice couldn't explain it very well, and it was very unclear. And we also want to make sure we get a robust process on that. So we're going to get all that feedback back, and then we'll get together as a caucus and we'll work out our position on it. I tell you right now, the National Party wants to support that policy.
Housing crisis, you flag changes to the planning law deal Labor struck with National. You say you are, quote, listening to the feedback. Could you be specific as to which feedback is influencing your thinking and how much change might be coming?
Well, there's two bits to it. The first is that the feedback has come back and said, hey, listen, we need to think more around the urban design standards of developments. And so, you know, those are things like height to boundary ratios and very technical natures of developments. And the second thing is local governments come back very clearly and said, hey, listen, we need more discretion about how we intensify our cities and our towns. And there's some good inputs on that. We will make some serious amendments to the bill and we'll discuss that with the minister.
What is the turnaround time? What is your target for delivering results as you promised to do? Where does polling need to get to and how quickly? And please don't duck it. It's at levels that no major party wants it to be at. So be bold and put some stakes in the ground.
Well, the stake is very simple. It's a very simple outcome, right? It's the 2023 election.
Let's look a little sooner, given the turnover of late of leaders. What's your ambition, say, by mid-2022?
No, I'm not going to get into that. We're going to gear the team up so that we're making continuous progress each and every day, each and every week, and so that we're geared up so that we are really competitive in 2023 and can win it.
If you were a CEO, you would be setting some quarterly targets for this turnaround team. By mid-2022, do you want to be at least back in the 30s?
All I can tell you is I want to win 2023, and we can win 2023.
Christopher Luxon, the new leader of the National Party. I was speaking to him just before we came on air this morning.